evil minds that plot destruction. Sorcerer of death's construction. In the fields of bodies burning, as the war machine keeps turning. Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed mind.
Welcome to the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia on the National Community Radio Satellite. Listen to the Anarchist World This Week, Australia's sacred cow slaughterhouse. Listen to analysis of local, national, international events. Listen to analysis you'll never hear anywhere else. Welcome to the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. This program is coming to you from the studios of 3CR in Melbourne. My name's Joseph Toscano. I'm hosting today's program. If you wonder what anarchy is all about, anarchos without rulers. It's about creating a society without rulers, not a society without rules. Now, there may be a little bit of delay today in getting the podcast up, but hopefully we'll sort that out in the next 24 hours or so. So a little bit of patience. Now, you can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. There's hundreds of podcasts there looking at different issues. And it's interesting sometimes to go back a few years and listen to a program and see what the significant issue was at that particular point in time. Now, we're going to start off with a subject which I think is important. I think I've raised it before, but I'm going to flesh it out today. And then obviously we'll have a look at what's happening in the Middle East and a few other things. Now, we all, whether we believe, in inverted commas, or think that climate change is real or not, is irrelevant. What's relevant is the fact that we are seeing the consequences of global warming. We are seeing those consequences, especially in this country. And the way you can actually look at this statistically is by looking at insurance companies. Now, insurance companies are not stupid. They bet with you that nothing's going to happen to your property. And if they're right, they put their money in their pocket and it's distributed to their shareholders. That's how insurance works. Now, insurance companies are not stupid. They look at statistics. If they see that in a particular area of the country that the risk of a disaster and a risk of payout has increased, well, they stop insuring that area. And that's why we've got this debate about a insurer of last resort, the Commonwealth Government. But the reality is that we are not only at increased risk of climate-induced emergencies, but we're also at increased risk of war. Anybody who's followed the disaster in the Middle East will understand that Australia is no longer isolated, especially North Australia, which has more United States troops in the Northern Territory than the Australian government, believe it or not. So Australia is not isolated anymore. So I think considering that situation, we should be looking at permanent emergency centres. Now, every time an emergency occurs, whether it's a cyclone, a bushfire, you know, there's this temporary stopgap measures which come into force to deal or attempt to deal with the fallout of that particular emergency. Now, it's time that we as a country looked at establishing permanent emergency centres which would consist of permanent staff, permanent equipment, and permanent accommodation for people who are displaced in disasters. Now, a simple way to fund this, a very simple way, which doesn't even require any activity by the public service in terms of collecting this tax, is a 1% stock market turnover tax. 1%. Every time a stock or share is sold on the Australian stock market and overseas stock markets by people who hold Australian passports, 1% would directly flow into the Treasury. This would collect anywhere between $20 to $30 billion per year. You can do a lot of things with $20 to $30 billion. Now, how would you establish these centres? Now, obviously, we have a small population but a large area to cover. And what I'd like to suggest is that for urban centres, major urban centres, that we have one permanent emergency centre which is staffed, one to deal with the emergency and two to deal with the aftermath, which is permanently staffed. One centre in a major urban centre for every 1 million people. That would account for about 25 to 30 emergency service centres. You could establish them on the outskirts of the city, like you establish airports. You could establish them on the outskirts of the city. As far as regional areas are concerned, major regional areas or regional areas, you could have one emergency centre for every 500,000 people. Now, considering that many of our major urban centres have populations of 200,000 to 300,000, it's obvious that they need some type of service. And then in rural areas, you'd have one emergency service, say, for every 250,000 people. So that would mean you'd need about 50 permanent emergency centres. Full-time staff, accommodation, medical services, the whole lot. Now, obviously, many of them will not be active, except will not be active constantly. But the role of the emergency service could be a role of education, educating the population they're responsible for about the best way to deal with an emergency. If we're going to find ourselves as a nation in a situation where we are having disaster after disaster after disaster, much more than we're used to, then it's important that we have a permanent ability to deal with those disasters. As I said at the beginning, an easy way to fund it, as everything is computerised as far as the stock markets are concerned, a 1% stock market turnover tax, which is collected as soon as a transaction occurs. It's a little bit like the GST, simple tax to collect. 1% stock market turnover tax, and that would be more than enough funding for 50 Australian permanent emergency centres, whose role would be one, to deal with emergencies as they occur, and two, to educate the public they're responsible for regarding one, their activities, and two, how to best minimise the effects of a disaster. It's a simple concept. I shouldn't be talking about this on the Anarchist World this week. But what's fascinating about this country is we don't seem to be interested in forward planning. We seem to have no interest whatsoever in looking after the interests of the people in this country. We've got a great deal of interest in looking after the 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication. Remember the hullabaloo when legislation was recently passed to increase the taxation revenue from people? I think there were about 16,000 of them who had more than $3 million in their superannuation funds, as if the end of the earth is coming. But when you talk about something real, that has an impact on every person on this continent, nothing happens. And obviously you'd have a coordinating centre which coordinate the 50 centres, and you could have that in Canberra. Listen to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. Now, I've been a little bit surprised. You know, it's hard to be surprised when you get to my age, but I've been surprised. I've been surprised by the debate, not just in the legacy media, social media, and, you know, but amongst people as they bitch about increasing fuel prices, increasing interest rates as a result of increasing fuel prices. And it's as if these, what is happening is divorced from the suffering that's occurring in the Middle East. Now, look, I hate to say this, I do drive a petrol-driven car. I haven't been able to afford an electric car yet, but hopefully I will at some stage. And I was buying petrol in Melbourne for about 155 cents a litre. 3 weeks later, we're looking at petrol in Melbourne at about 260 cents a litre. So that's about an increase of a dollar a litre, which is considerable, for most people. Because it means that if they rely on petrol-driven vehicles, and let's not forget our trucking fleet, not our trucking fleet, the Australian trucking fleet is 99.99% reliant on diesel fuel, and agriculture is 99.9% reliant on diesel fuel, that it does have a major impact as far as cost is concerned. But I've just been disgusted by the lack of debate regarding the reasons this has occurred, the reasons we find ourselves in this situation, not just by the government or the opposition or other political parties, but by people in general. It's as if what's happening in the Middle East is totally divorced from increasing costs in this country. It's just extraordinary. And the fact is that there's very little discussion about the impact that these wars are having on the civilian population. Now, obviously, Iran is in a position where it can, to some degree, defend itself. But what's happening in Lebanon is unforgivable, totally unforgivable. Lebanon has a population of, I think, around 5 million people. And let's not forget, there's over 250,000 Lebanese living in this country, mainly as a result of the civil war which occurred when Israel took over southern Lebanon in 1982. The fact is that there seems to be no government response to the atrocities, and they are atrocities, that are occurring in Lebanon, where we've seen residential areas being flattened, where we see the war criminals in the Israeli government talk about gasification. You like that word? New word, gasification of southern Lebanon. What that basically means is reducing everything to rubble. When we see journalists specifically targeted because they're trying to tell the world the truth. When we see medical facilities being destroyed in an attempt to force people out of southern Lebanon. Now, over 600,000 have left, but there are many who've decided to remain. And their future is very, very, very difficult currently. But we don't have that discussion. And as far as the Australian government is concerned, it's as if we have no interaction with Lebanon, despite over a quarter of a million Australians being from Lebanon or being children of Lebanese refugees who's come to this country. I mean, a paltry $5 million for humanitarian aid. Unlike the French government, which obviously has had a long relationship with Lebanon, we don't see the Australian government getting up, or the opposition, and saying this is an illegal war. The atrocities that are occurring there are just beyond the pale. So what I'd like you to do, and there's no point listening to The Anarchist World This Week if, you know, you don't want to do things. You may as well listen to easy music. What I'd like you to do is, when you're involved in conversations with your neighbours or your friends, raise the reason why fuel prices have increased, why interest rates will increase, why the cost of food is increasing, as well as raising the plight of the people in Lebanon, especially, who are suffering the brunt of this illegal invasion by the Israeli government. Now, those of you who somehow believed, and I've spoken to people who believe that the United States of America and Israel were actually interested in the fate of the Iranian opposition, those Iranians who have battled against the theocratic and authoritarian tendencies of the Islamic government over the last 47 years, think again. My reading of the situation is that they've just been thrown under a bus. That's right. Once again, those Iranians who've been struggling against the religious dictatorship in Iran have been condemned, and they never were. There was never any interest in Israel and the United States of America in their fate. What they are interested in is actually trying to neutralise the Iranian government and getting a government which was sympathetic to the idea of a greater Israel in the Middle East. Now, things have changed in the last 24 hours, and I'm putting my neck out here a little bit. I was listening to the war criminal Netanyahu, the current Prime Minister of Israel, the man who addressed the Australian Parliament, Mr. the Washington Buffoon's former friend, and it was looked like he's beginning to realise that the United States of America is going to bring this dispute to an end soon. Now, the American president, the Washington buffoon, has decided that he doesn't want to see body bags full of Americans return to the USA. It's not good for his re-election, well, his election, his party's election prospects at the November midterm elections. And they've decided to cut some type of deal with the government of Iran, which doesn't include the Strait of Hormuz. Now, the Israeli government, the war criminals, that's right, the war criminals in the Israeli cabinet, who have pursued policies of genocide in Gaza, and I'd just like to just give you an example of what it's like. Now, they attacked, the first thing is, when the Hamas broke out of Gaza, because it's been a prison for over the last 20 years, the world's biggest prison, when they broke out of Gaza and killed over 1,000 Israelis and kidnapped, I think, over almost 300 to 400 Israelis, the fact is that Mossad, the world's greatest, you know, spy agency, didn't have an idea what was happening, what was going to happen. So first of all, the Netanyahu terrorist government, one, failed to protect its own people. I mean, that explosion out of Gaza could have been terminated within a few hours, but it wasn't. So that's a great failure of the current government. So in order to hide their failure, what they've done is they've now gone on this holy war. That's right, holy war. Right? And listening to the Prime Minister, well, I should say the war criminal today, I won't call him Prime Minister, the Israeli war criminal today. Listening today, it's obviously that he's realised that the Washington buffoon is going to cut the umbilical cord and they're going to be on their own fighting a war on four fronts: Gaza, the West Bank, Lebanon, Iran, and even Yemen. And that's a population of 9 million people. And he spoke about how wonderful their air force was, how wonderful their air defence system was, but he didn't speak about the atrocities that their government has been involved in. For example, in Gaza, hunger being used as a weapon, mass murder, the destruction of 85% of structures in Gaza, destructions of hospitals, places of worship, schools, and the fact that over 75,000 Gazans had been murdered during that two-year period. And the carnage continues with air raids continuing in Gaza as I speak. To give you an idea, I mean, the word 75,000 is difficult, isn't it? Difficult. What's 75,000? I'll give you an example. Now, the distance between Melbourne and Geelong, which is Victoria's second largest city, and Sydney and Newcastle, well, at least I'm not sure about Sydney and Newcastle, the distance, but between Melbourne and Geelong, it's 75 k's. Now, if you walked from Melbourne and Geelong, and every metre there would be a body. Every metre of your walk, there would be a body. 1 kilometre, 1,000 metre, 1,000 bodies. And every fourth body would be that of a child under 12. That's the reality. That's what we forget, the reality of war. The reality of what's happening in Iran, the reality of what's happening in Lebanon, the reality of what's happening in Israel, the reality of what's happening in the Arab states. The reality of war is that civilians who are the major casualties, they're the ones that fill the body bags. They're the ones who have to deal with the aftermath of having their means of living destroyed, their accommodation destroyed in some so-called war against evil. It's just extraordinary. But you know it, I know it. Let's see what happens. Now, I'm going to make a prediction today, and you may find this prediction a little bit ludicrous. I predict that the war criminal, the Prime Minister of Israel, Netanyahu, will be in the Hague International Court within 12 months. Facing charges of war crimes. And I'll tell you why. Because the mood in Israel is beginning to turn. Most Israeli citizens believed that the state was able to protect them from the Palestinians and the rest of the people in the Middle East through brute force. And what we see in Gaza and the West Bank is nothing more than colonisation at the end of a gun. And the recent legislation passed through the parliament in Israel is quite fascinating. If you're a West Bank Palestinian and you're involved in a dispute with an Israeli, Jewish citizens, and you kill a Jewish citizen, there is a new penalty of mandatory hanging. But if you are a Jewish citizen and you kill a Palestinian, there's no consequence. And we see this over and over again. When you get a government that passes that type of legislation, you begin to see the extent of its bankruptcy. So let's see what happens over the next few days and the next few weeks. Because obviously, the buffoon in Washington has decided that he doesn't want to see American body bags land by the hundreds in the US of A. He's going to cut his ties with Netanyahu and tell him to pull his head in, strike a deal with the theocrats in Iran, and get on with the business of trying to win the November midterm elections. Listen to the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. And talking about terrorists, it's unbelievable. This country's totally unbelievable. I'm not going to even bother talking about the Australian government and their response to the buffoon in Washington. But I'm going to talk about the Australian media. Yesterday, 31st of March, 2026, we saw a terrorist apologist address the Canberra Press Gallery. Now, everybody uses the word terrorist to talk about Hamas, Hezbollah, Iran. Anybody you don't like is a terrorist. We've got domestic terrorists. Remember those two people who were killed by ICE in the US? But when you get a terrorist apologist, and that's the Israeli ambassador, being given a platform to, you know, support their genocidal intents by the Australian Press Gallery, by the Canberra Press Gallery, you begin to understand the bankruptcy of the media in this country. Just a few days after three journalists were targeted and killed in southern Lebanon, we see a terrorist apologist, the Israeli ambassador, address the Canberra Press Gallery. I'd like to see somebody from Hamas address the Canberra Press Gallery or Hezbollah, but we can't because they're terrorists. They're terrorists under Australian legislation. There are terrorist organisations, the government of Iran. Because there are two sides to stories, every story, irrespective of what we think. So all I can say is maybe the Canberra Press Gallery could get somebody to give an opposing viewpoint about what's happening in the Middle East. You'd think that men and women of their calibre, well, maybe I'm asking too much, would actually try to get both sides of the story. Listen to the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. Now, over the last 48 hours, we've seen the shooting death of Desi Freeman, a man who killed two police, Victorian police officers, carrying out a warrant at Porepunkah, or near Porepunkah, in Victoria. And we saw him shot dead by Victorian police 48 hours ago. Now, I'm not going to eulogise Mr. Freeman, but what I'm interested in is the reaction amongst the population, especially people in authority. Now, it's obvious, but when individuals are involved in atrocious acts, they're condemned. It's one thing condemning Freeman. It's another thing showing a modicum of sympathy for his children and family. Haven't seen much of that. Obviously, individual evil needs to be condemned, and it's condemned. But what I find extraordinary in this country, and I assume it's the same around the world, that mass evil is lauded. We have people in this country, political parties in this country, organisations in this country, who somehow think the actions of the United States government and the Israeli government in the Middle East are legitimate and we should support them. Not just verbally, but support them with weapons and troops. It's as if you're an individual and you're involved in a criminal, vicious act, the population will rise and condemn you, which I agree with. But if you're a state or a political organisation that's involved in mass evil, mass slaughter, mass destruction, you're lauded. It's quite fascinating when you think about it. Let's move on. Let's move on. Australia and Spain, a tale of two sovereign nation states. What's a sovereign nation state? People talk about sovereign nation states. People talk about sovereign citizens, you know. Basically, a sovereign nation state or a sovereign citizen is somebody who believes or has the capacity to determine their future irrespective of the situation they find themselves in. Obviously, the idea of a sovereign citizen in a sovereign nation state is totally ridiculous. You cannot be a sovereign citizen in a sovereign nation state because the state is the sole arbitrator of the law. But let's look at Australia and Spain as sovereign nation states. Australia's reaction to the buffoons' intervention in Iran in the Middle East has been one of complete support when the action occurred, and then one of pulling back a little bit when we needed to send boots on the ground. So we have tailored as a nation, not we, our government, you know, our representatives, have tailored as a nation a response which basically supports the actions of the United States of America and Israel. Now, Spain, which is another sovereign nation state, which is much, much, much closer to the action, has done two things that we could have done. One, it declared the war illegal, didn't allow any of its joint bases to be used for intervention, and over the last 48 hours has declared airspace over Spain as a no-go area for the United States of America and Israel to conduct their war, their illegal war, in the Middle East. So, which is the sovereign nation state? Which is the state that determines its foreign policy? Three, of intervention by another country. Well, obviously, Spain has made the decision that it doesn't care what the United States of America does, doesn't care what tariffs it introduces. It believes that taking a moral stand, an ethical stand in this situation is much more important than any economic consequences. Well, Australia, on the other hand, we're quite happy to kowtow to the United States of America. But the reality is that this raises exceptionally important issues for each and every Australian on this continent, each and every one of us. Because if we are not sovereign in terms of the decisions that we as a nation are able to make, what that means is that we will find ourselves in a situation where we basically do what the United States wants us to do because we think that they will protect us in the near future. And the reality is, it's about America first. And I don't blame the buffoon in Washington to have an American first agenda because they're a sovereign nation state and they don't care about anybody else except the activities of their 1%. So, all I can say is it's about time this country grew a backbone, because ultimately our defence is not reliant, should not be reliant on how far we acquiesce to the United States' interests in this part of the world. This is the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. Now, it's interesting, isn't it? Everybody's talking about cost of living, cost of living crisis, increasing interest rates, cost of living crisis. Now, I'm not saying there isn't a cost of living crisis. Obviously, there's a cost of living crisis. But the cost of living crisis is not evenly borne. And that's a dilemma. If you're a Social Security beneficiary, or if you're somebody who relies on a wage, the fact is that you are the person who bears the cost of living, who is faced with the cost of living crisis. Do you buy petrol? Do you buy food? Do you pay for your kids to go on an excursion? Do you go on a holiday? And that's the reality. That's what a cost of living crisis is. Cost of living crisis never seem to affect the 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication. Never seems to affect them. But obviously, if you're living a hand-to-mouth existence, everything that comes into your bank account goes out by the end of the fortnight on basic necessities, well, obviously, any cost of living crisis is going to affect you. So we see the people who are affected by cost of living crisis are basically small business people, right? Especially those who are sole traders, wage earners, a significant proportion of the population that is pay-as-you-earn taxpayers, and the 30% of Australians rely on Social Security benefits to survive. The investment class, the 8% that have enough disposable income to invest either in stocks and shares or the property market, are basically protected from the cost of living crisis. And the 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication are going to make a lot of money out of a cost of living crisis. We see that constantly. So the dilemma is, what's the way forward? What's the way forward? Interesting, isn't it? What's the way forward? For far too long, and I've said it on this program for years, for far too long, as a society, as a people, as a nation, we have believed that the way forward is to support the privatisation, corporatisation, deregulation, globalisation agenda which has been pursued by successive governments over the last half a century. And obviously, 50 years later, it hasn't worked. Now, an increasing number of Australians are beginning to understand that it doesn't work. There is no such thing as trickle-down economics. We've seen the fortunes of the 1% in the investment class soar, but we haven't seen a corresponding improvement in the lives of the other 90% of people in this country. And if it wasn't for government intervention in many regards, we would find ourselves in a particularly difficult situation. Now, currently, we are seeing a revival in the fortunes of divided nation. Divided nation has been able to impress an increasing number of Australians who are pissed off with a system that promises them everything and delivers nothing. And what we see is that people are looking for easy answers to the problems they face. As I keep saying on this program, it's the immigrant. It's the person who wears a funny hat. It's the person who speaks a different language. It's the person whose colour is not the same as mine. And the list goes on and on. And what we're seeing is the divisive policies which are pursued by a divided nation are attracting an increasing number of people to their ranks. When you think one in four Australians support divided nation more than Her Majesty's loyal opposition, you begin to understand that we have an issue. So why have we found ourselves in this situation? And I've spoken about this for years. One, the so-called left. There's nothing left of the left as far as I'm concerned. But the so-called left is involved in an inter-Sinine battle regarding identity politics, understanding that the failure of Marxism and Leninism to deliver to ordinary people, what the so-called left has been doing has been honing its interests on the identity politics bandwagon. It's no wonder that most adherents today to the so-called left are university graduates. Not that I've got anything against university graduates. We have seen a number of things that have occurred in this country over the last 50 years which have destroyed the notion of a working class. And this is nothing new. The destruction of the trade union movement through legislation, that's right, legislation, has lessened the ability of people to identify as workers. The introduction of individual contracts in most workplaces, and it's the dominant contract in many workplaces, means that we all think of ourselves as individuals, not as members of particular groups. Then we've seen the destruction of the housing market, where if you're lucky, in inverted commas, enough to enter the housing market as a buyer, you'll be spending the next 40 to 50 years of your life paying off a mortgage. And the other thing that we've seen is the fact that young people today are doubly disadvantaged. One, for an all-encompassing hex debt for trying to get ahead in life. And two, by the increasing problems faced by the climate, they face as a consequence of the climate emergency. So it's natural for people to think, well, it's got to be somebody's fault, and gravitate towards the ideas, if not support for divided nation. There seems to be little appetite or little interest in the legacy media. And why do I keep mentioning the legacy media on this program? See, the legacy media may not make a profit, may be shrinking, but it sets the political, social and cultural agenda for social media, television, radio, privately owned, publicly owned. And that's why people like Murdoch and his, in the fruits of his loins, continue to fund a news outlet like The Australian or Fox News, despite them making consistent losses in this country, because it allows them to set the political, social and cultural agenda. So every time there's a movement which aims to unify people and unify people on the basis that they are part of the majority, the public, what we see is an almost total lack of interest among Australians regarding becoming involved in those movements, because somehow they think that the situation they find themselves in is directly related to, one, failure of government, and two, because of the increasing complexities in terms of the cultural makeup of this country. The reality is that we're all in the same boat. Some are rowing, the majority are rowing, and some are sitting on the upper deck sipping pina coladas and eating sturgeon caviar. And that's the reality. We row the boat for them. So it's disappointing to see so few people being involved in campaigns that look at growing inequality. It's disappointing to see so many people that call themselves progressive have no interest whatsoever in the increasing divisions which are occurring in this country, in order, divisions which have been created in order to maintain the integrity and power of the 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication. Now, I'm a foundation member and the secretary of this registered officer of public interest before corporate interest. We were formed about 11 years ago, with the hope of getting involved in parliamentary politics, not just direct action. Minimal success. And I'll tell you why. It's very simple. Disinformation and misinformation is so rife in this country that people have forgotten, one, their history. They've forgotten the fact that everything we take for granted, whether it's the introduction of Medicare, with the introduction of public hospitals, with the public schools, NDIS, early childhood development supports, taxation reform, it didn't come out of thin air. It didn't come because the 1% said, "You've been a good boy, here you are." It came through struggle. We have forgotten the sacrifices that were made by generations of Australians, not just in terms of being involved in strikes and protests and direct actions and political movements which forced political parties to take up their issues. In a country with no history is a country that constantly repeats the past mistakes. And that's what we are. We have forgotten. Post-federation, Commonwealth employment was restricted to unionists. They got first preference. Today, unionists are considered to be criminals. We see policies being put in place which prevent people from actually organising, from getting together. We see legislation which puts an onerous, has an onerous impact on the ability of people to freely organise, to protest. Just look at all the legislation that's been passed in the last few years in this country regarding protest activity. And we continue to fight amongst ourselves because people don't understand that the public, that's each and every one of us. We've been led to the conclusion that everything that is public is inefficient, it's bad, it doesn't work. This is propaganda, which is based on the fact that public institutions, those few that are left, are starved of funds so they can provide the services that are necessary. When you see 50% of Commonwealth funding going to private schools and $8 billion going to the private health insurance industry and the billions of dollars which are wasted on corporate welfare and keeping the fossil fuel industry afloat in this country, you begin to understand why we find ourselves in this situation. So as individuals and as groups, I believe, and it's a belief, that the way forward is for us to, one, to organise, and two, to explain. Explain to people why we're in this situation. And if we don't do that, we will continue to exist on the margins in this country. We will continue to see the rise of political movements like Divided Nations. We will continue to see the growing inequalities in this country. And when you have governments that jump, that's right, jump to protect the interests of the 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication, you begin to understand why change and the way forward is so difficult. Because ultimately, 90% of people in this country are the victims of a political system and a social system and a cultural system which is ingrained in our DNA, which rewards the immoral, the unethical, the crooks, the liars in this country, instead of rewarding those that do the hard work, pay their bills, obey the laws. And until those who do that, who obey the laws, pay their bills, continue to moan and groan and not act, nothing will change. Thank you for listening to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. This program is streaming live on 3cr.org.au. My name's Joseph Toscano. YouTube channels, Public Interest Before Corporate Interest, historical channel, josephtoscano.com, which looks at the radical past, web pages, PIPC, Public Interest Before Corporate Interest, anarchistmedia.org, the list goes on and on. Facebook pages, Joseph Toscano. Tons of things you can get into. The important thing is don't limit yourself just to one issue. The issues which bind us are ultimately issues about power and wealth. These are the central questions which have exercised the minds of people for generations. Power and wealth. It's inequalities in power and wealth which put us in the situation we find ourselves in Australia today. You can leave messages on 0439 395 489, 0439 395 489, and you can always write to us. Yes, you can write to Post Office Box 20, Parkville 3052. Thank you for listening to The Anarchist World This Week on your local community station, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. This program will be podcast within the next 24 to 36 hours. There are many podcasts you can look at. Just go to 3cr.org.au, Anarchist World This Week. Don't forget, 3CR's 50th anniversary celebration on the 4th of July. That's right, 2026. Collingwood Town Hall starting at 11 a.m. And don't forget, save your pennies. The 3CR Radiothon is almost upon us. So, next week, who knows what we'll talk about. I'm sure you'll find a topic that, if you've got any topics you'd like me to look at, I'm happy to do that. I may not talk about them, but I'm happy to look at them. All right, let's go. We must go out of the studio. Not yet. I can't believe it. We're getting all this time. That number again, if you've got a topic you want me to look at, 0439 395 489. 0439 395 489. And just to reassure you, I'm not an AI chat box, although I may sound like one.
Evil minds that plot destruction. Sorcerer of death. death's construction. In the fields of bodies burning, as the war machine keeps turning, death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed mind.
Welcome to the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia on the National Community Radio Satellite. Listen to the Anarchist World This Week, Australia's sacred cow slaughterhouse. Listen to analysis of local, national, international events. Listen to analysis you'll never hear anywhere else.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.